The following takes place between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. Events occur.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back. It's FPT Radio Live. A little late start, a little, as you know, technology issues, but we are here. We're ready to rock and roll, and we have an entire NFL divisional weekend to react and recap. It was a fun weekend of football. We had some pretty good games, a lot of great storylines, and then one storyline that just is as old as time itself, and that is Tom Brady competing in a championship weekend. So, without further ado, I got to bring in my co-host. That's right. He is the guy I would pick to run my latex company. He is Mr. Mike DeBate. Mike, what's up, buddy?
No.
La, la, la. I'm doing well Monday morning here, my friend. And you're absolutely right. 14 now. Count them. 14 conference championship games for Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr. It's amazing. It really is. Nobody really can count that high. It's a good thing that Brady has so many rings. It helps you to get there. Yeah. You just keep counting and counting. Maybe he's got one more left in him. I'll tell you, the way that the Buccaneers played last night, the Packers are going to have their hands full this weekend. Mm-hmm. But so will the Bucs, because the Packers played very well as well. But this is going to be a great, great contest this weekend. Another barn burner in the AFC as well. Cleveland Browns, they had it. Yeah. Almost there and couldn't quite seal the deal. The Kansas City Chiefs move on, and they will host the defending AFC East champion, Buffalo Bills. It still just doesn't sound right, but that'll be a great game as well in Arrowhead.
Well, and that's really it, too. It's you know, there's so much to unpack from this weekend, and, you know, we obviously joke and talk a little bit about Drew Brees, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's there's something, there's emotions that go through everyone watching a player that's been a part of a league. You know, I talk about Tom Brady, you know, being a part of you know, my sports life since I was 14 years old. Well, you know, Drew's been kind of around the same time, so, you know, to knowing that he's obviously walking off, and you see some of those interactions he had, you know, specifically at the you know, at the end of the game after the fact, when all the most of the cameras were gone, but he and Tom were out on the field together. It's just one of those things where it's like, I have my disagreements with folks who consider Breeze a certain number of quarterback in terms of greatest of all time. Yeah, I'll have my disagreements, and I have my thoughts on him in general, but it doesn't mean that it's like, okay, this is a guy who's put a lot into this, and, you know, that's the end of his career. And unfortunately for him, it didn't really, you know, end too well on a high note, because he didn't look, you know, I'm not going to sit here and mince words, he didn't play well. And you know what, it was very evident early on that he was going to be limited. There was a play. I think it was in the first quarter. They were down close to the end zone, and Drew went to go throw a pass, and it just nosedived into the ground. And I get it. Look, you know, quarterbacks throw balls into the ground all the time. Sometimes it's intentional. I just got a feeling. I was like, ooh, that doesn't give me a lot of hope for what he's capable of doing. And let's face it. I mean, he was very limited, and, as exciting and as confusing as that play was with Jameis Winston, that was really the only offense they were able to muster against this Bucs defense. That, look, I mean, they showed up to play. Devin White was an absolute monster out there, and like, you know, this is a guy who missed last week because of COVID. So there was a lot of storylines in that game, of course, and, you know, it's setting up what has been a matchup that has been anticipated for quite some time. Fortunately, Tom had to move to the NFC for it to actually happen, because Aaron Rodgers can never get the deal done himself. But no, all kidding aside, it should be fun. Hats off to Drew Brees for what, you know, we all believe is the end of a very long and what I think was a pretty nice career. I do think it's been a little overstated, but, you know, this isn't the place to sit there and try to bring him down right now. So hats off to Drew Brees. Saints are going home, and they got a lot of questions ahead of them, not only at the quarterback position, but just in, as a team in general.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there were questions, you know, when it comes to their defensive structure. There were questions among the offensive skill position players. Their O-line, I still think, is in pretty shape. They still may need to add a piece there, but ultimately the biggest question for New Orleans now is going to be their quarterback position and where do they go from here. Is Taysom Hill the long-term answer? I think a lot of people would probably roll their eyes and say, well, he's a nice complimentary piece. If they have to go into this season with him, then that will be what they'll do. But I think they're going to be actively looking to upgrade. In a lot of ways, it reminds you of the New England Patriots offseason last year, falling into a lot of the only differences is that they're pretty much It's almost a foregone conclusion that Drew Brees will indeed hang it up. Nothing's been made official yet, but it seems like that is the direction in which he's going. And if that is the case, where does New Orleans go from here? Now, all of a sudden, they're throwing their hat into the quarterback carousel. We mentioned the coaching carousel all the time, Bud, but that quarterback carousel is getting full. Well, and where do some of these players end up?
I'd imagine Jameis Winston's going to get a shot to be a starter. You know, not that I... Again, I'm reserving judgment for who he's going to be with the Saints because I really don't know, and I'm obviously not going to make any sort of sweeping judgments about him throwing one pass to a receiver that didn't have 10 yards, a defender within 10 yards of him.
I don't have it in front of me. I don't have it in front of me. Is he under contract next year? Did he sign a two-year deal, or is he a one-year deal?
I don't believe so, but again, I feel like the Saints wouldn't have invested the time in Jameis if they weren't planning on at least giving him an opportunity to be the starter going forward. And look, it's not a bad idea. And you talk about the Patriots. Well, this was kind of like getting Cam Newton in 2018 or in 2019 and having him sit behind Tom Brady for a year. And perhaps that would have set him up a little bit, you know, better for a season to be a little bit more successful. Jameis is obviously younger. He's another former first round pick. He had his struggles obviously in Tampa and Tampa, sorry folks, I know there's still some Jameis fans out there. Tampa did the absolute right thing in moving on. And when you see an opportunity to go get Tom Brady, you go get him because, well, you see what happens. But this could be the easiest part of the transition for the Saints because, yeah, they have questions at quarterback, but they got a lot of cap issues. And this team, maybe they're not the favorite next year, you know, in the division. Maybe the expectations get changed for this team. It's a lot of uncertainty. And yeah, like you said, very similar to what we saw with the Patriots this year, where it's like, okay, where do we put this team now? Although I will say this, the biggest difference, though, they may benefit from Drew Brees walking away. And again, it's not meant as an insult. I don't mean it that way. It's just, I think it was very evident, and it's been very evident for a while, and why he's, you know, decided to hang him up. And that's, he's lost the arm strength. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't even remember them attempting anything. And, you know, Troy Aikman and those guys and Joe Buck, they were talking about it all evening, especially late in the game. They didn't even attempt anything past 15, 20 yards with Drew Brees. And, you know, when you're down 10 late in the fourth quarter, you know, you got to be able to throw it down the field. And despite what people were saying about Brady and his final few weeks with the Patriots, I was not one of them. I have receipts. Don't worry. Despite what those folks were saying about Brady, he was not falling off. His play was not falling off. It was, again, more of a product of the situation around and just, you know, look, a bad end to a season. It happens. Not often with Brady, because guess what? Again, like I mentioned, 14 championship games in his 19th season as a starter. Obviously, he's been in the league for 21 years, but, you know, who counts 2000 and 2008 unless you're a Russell Wilson fan trying to count wins in his first 8 years as a starter. So, yeah, I mean, it's just so much. I think I covered like half the things in my little monologue there. But, you know, hey, divisional weekend is exciting for a reason. So,
It absolutely is exciting for a reason. And look, bottom line, with with regard to what Aikman had to say last night, and you'd said it eloquently about not attempting passes over 20 yards. Brady had already tested the field. He hadn't connected on a couple of them. Some of them weren't his fault. But at the same time, when you have that type of lack of confidence in your signal caller to be able to complete passes of that type, it really does. It limits you. So I think it's interesting that you mentioned about Jameis getting a shot. That's something that I wasn't sure of. I do think Jameis will get a shot at a starting position. I don't know if it's going to be in New Orleans, and that's why I wanted to know if it's going to be, if they're going to bring him back if he was under contract. That I didn't know in front of me. I don't necessarily know if it'll be in New Orleans, but I do think he has a chance to do that. He still, looked like he can get the job done yesterday with a little razzle dazzle, touchdown pass that we saw. It'll be an interesting offseason for him, no question about it. If he does end up back in New Orleans, what kind of team will they build around him? There were three other games on the slate this weekend. Really, a lot of interesting storylines, including the one that shared the bill yesterday afternoon. Cleveland Browns and Kansas City Chiefs nearly coming down to the wire. A lot of people thought this was going to be a blowout. We both had discussed the fact that we thought this was going to be a lot closer than people thought. Again, I picked the Browns, it's scratching. So. it's and you were almost right on the money.
Almost is only. What horseshoes, hand grenades, and Aaron Rodgers' case to be the greatest of all time? That's the only time works. Okay, don't worry, I'm warming up, cracking the knuckles, warming up for tomorrow's chat with John. It should be fun. Now, real quick though, I won't go as hard as I anticipated going into this weekend, but I want to give a little shout out, Mike, because we're going to be doing a little interactive piece later in the week. But Dylan and Ross of Dylan and Ross Say Sports live Monday through Friday here on Full Press Radio at 5 p.m. Eastern if you are interested in listening, and I highly recommend it. I'm gonna extend my hand and say congratulations on obviously a fine run for the Saints, and we're not gonna go too hard on them because we had a little bit of a bet going on, and that was, well, if the Bucs and Brady won, well, we'd have to have them read a little speech written by us, very very tasteful. Don't worry, it's gonna be okay. And then obviously the opposite is true as well, and of course the Bucs and Brady won, and so look forward to that. I would anticipate later in this week we'll be able to all enjoy that, but we have a lot of fun, and those guys are great. Those guys are great. Listen to their show. I highly recommend it. And hopefully they will be telling you exactly what the Saints are going to do to get back into the mix of things for next year. Because, look, it's not the end of the world. And as good as Brady is, he's not going to be there forever. I say that now, but at the end of the day, he could end up retiring at like 48. And that essentially is forever in NFL terms. But anyways, you started to shift towards the AFC, and that's what I wanted to do next, because obviously there's a lot coming out of that game. First and foremost, as much slack and as much, I guess I've become a Mahomes hater, quote unquote. No one wants to see him be injured. You want to see him get healthy and get out there.
Right.
Prior to that, though, he was playing okay. And look, it again, this isn't so much as so much of a indictment on him, because let's face it, Brady wasn't great in the beginning of the game. At the end of the game, obviously he became Tom Brady, and that Bucs offense was rolling. So this isn't me saying, oh no, Patrick Mahomes sucks. No, it's just me being realistic, and unfortunately, there's not enough of that in the commentary around this league anymore. So look, he was playing all right. He was doing, doing enough. I thought Cleveland, I was very disappointed in how Cleveland came out, because, excuse me. When they first play to David Njoku, very early on, first drive, I saw that happen. I'm like, okay, I think Cleveland is you know, this could be good. One, I didn't like them kicking the ball off to Kansas City. This is a team that needed to run the ball to win this game. And how can you run the ball when you start the game off behind? By the time your offense gets the ball for the very first time, you're already behind, and it kind of screws up your plan. So I didn't really like that much. It didn't lose them the game. I just thought they weren't, I don't know, I felt like they weren't aggressive enough, and the play calling was a little suspect, in my opinion, because when they needed to rush, they weren't rushing, and I don't know, just a very disappointing showing for Cleveland, because, you know, I want to be happy for them, I really do. Because to get to this point after, you know, again, we all know how long it's been since they've done this or done that. I mean, that's a great part of the season, and in that sense is successful. But I thought they squandered a golden opportunity yesterday. And even if they didn't come through with the win, I thought they could have made it far more in contention as it was at the end of the day. So again, I don't know. I don't know how to react to this Cleveland team, because it's like, I want to be happy for them. And I do think that this is a positive step forward, but I also think that they, in the same, in the same way of getting a positive, they did a very Cleveland thing and also got a negative out of it. And I think you're going to be debating that all off season if you're a Cleveland fan. So what were your thoughts on Cleveland? And then we'll get into Kansas City here.
My thoughts on Cleveland were exactly the same as yours. I think they left this field knowing that they really had an opportunity here. It's not like Cleveland left it all out on the field. They just ran into a better team and, you know, shake hands, regroup, retool, and then next year maybe you come at Kansas City and maybe it's a different outcome. They really had a legitimate chance to win this game. And Kevin Stefanski burning through timeouts is going to be something that is going to be debated in Cleveland now for the next few months. Why do you burn timeouts there? Why do you issue a challenge there? Very questionable coaching decisions down the stretch that did hurt them. You saw Myles Garrett say it last night as soon as the game was over. Came down to defense. So we let it slip, meaning the Cleveland Brown defense. Basically pointed out two opportunities, didn't make it happen. His own word, it was right in front of us, and we just hesitates, and then he says, this time we just didn't get it done. That's something that I think is going to weigh on this Cleveland team. Now, the good teams that have the ability to take a shot like this, come back, rebound, and make themselves better the following year is still to be determined on this Cleveland team. I don't know if I've seen enough of them to say, yes, this team is resilient enough, they're well-coached enough, they're disciplined enough to be able to turn this into a positive in 2021. I'm not sure that this is the makeup of that team. If it were, you know, certain team in Foxborough, maybe I'd feel a little bit differently, because that coaching staff is battle tested and they know how to win.
Let's draw a comparison from their very own division and from the very same weekend, the Ravens. Last year, 14-2, MVP, they go in and they get upset by the Titans. That's a big deal, because same questions. Who is this team? What are they going to do? Well, they come back out this year. They don't win 14 games, which is fine, but I thought they had a better season. They go into the playoffs. They beat the Titans, the same team that upset them. So now all of a sudden you're like, wow, okay, this is good. This is good for this team. What's going to happen moving forward? And they lay an absolute egg against the Bills. And look, this, you know, had a lot to do with the Bills, because the Bills are a really good team. But that has to be an incredibly disappointing feeling. And you kind of feel the same way with Cleveland, because this isn't just one step back, two steps forward type of thing. This could be a two steps back type situation, because how does this team recover mentally? How does it refocus? And you know, I say this about the Ravens as much as the Browns, too. So definitely questions for both those teams, although there are more things to be celebrated for the Browns, I believe. You can't be content with that, though. That's the problem.
No, you can't. And I think it is. It's a tale of two, and how ironic it is that these two franchises, the past and the future and the present, it's unbelievable. I mean, these two were essentially cut from the same cloth. And, you know, it really is. Literally. I mean, for Cleveland, for Cleveland, you need to bring it back to the run. When Cleveland dedicated themselves to the running game yesterday, you saw what this team's capable of. All of a sudden, Nick Chubb starts converting on fourth downs. All of a sudden, Kareem Hunt is able to go off and start running the ball effectively. It opens things for Baker Mayfield. We didn't see that yesterday with the Cleveland Browns in the first half. So a lot of different interesting things going on, but ultimately, I think the Browns right now are at a crossroads, and they're going to have to show that they're capable of stepping up and playing well. Like I said, the jury's still out on that because we just don't know how battle-tested this team is. Now, on the other side, you look at the Kansas City Chiefs, and you know what this team can do. I mean, they lose their star quarterback. They lose, arguably, one of the best players in the league. And they still find ways to get it done. I mean, regardless of whether you want to give credit to Andy Reid or Eric Bieniemy, or give credit where credit is due to Chad Henne. He's the one that's going to stand in there and take the snaps and be able to make the plays. He stepped up, and he stepped up big time. You've got Tyreek Hill making big catches. I mean, this is a team that we know is capable of winning. They won it last year, so not a big surprise there. The Ravens on the other side, and I'm sorry, the Ravens on the other side, you're absolutely right. If Lamar Jackson is going to be the focal point of this offense, and you want to keep remaining to do what you need to do, something needs to change, either game planning or whatever, but you have to be able to put him in spots where he's going to be able to deliver wins for you. And right now, Baltimore is showing that they're a pretty good regular season team, good for the hype, but when it comes down to it and they need to get a big win, they're just not a team that seems to be capable of getting that win. Are they going to be able to bring players in that are going to be able to do that? Or is it a coaching issue? Do they have to, and I'm not saying John Harbaugh's job is in jeopardy, folks, far from it, but do you have to maybe bring in another assistant or change your philosophy a little bit to try to fit what your superstar does well? A lot of questions going on the teams that exited the playoffs yesterday.
I'm glad you brought up Chad Henne because I did find it funny. And it was almost instantaneous, too. And it was all uniform. It was like, everyone on all these major shows got a memo right before they went on and reacted to this. And I find it funny that on that fourth down play, which it was a great call. I mean, it was a high percentage play. I mean, it was a smart play to do and, whatnot. The immediate reaction was to just go head over heels for the guts and courage that Andy Reid, and it was Andy Reid, wow, what an incredible this, incredible that. Damn well, Mike, if everything was the exact same and Patrick Mahomes was in there, this would be, we heard it from Tony Romo. I mean, come on. You think that we were just complaining to complain? No, I mean, the whole Tony Romo thing, I'm really over it at this point. Like, I love listening to him when he can break down X's and O's, but when he turns into fanboy Tony Romo, it's too much for me. Like, there's a certain professionalism, and I'm not saying he's not a professional, because, again, he's great at breaking down and telling you what's happening on the field, but when he gets into this, like, super hyperbole and super excitement, like, it's kind of worn thin a little bit. And we saw it again. I mean, Patrick Mahomes literally completed an 8-yard rollout pass, and Tony Romo was sitting there in awe, and I'm like, it's a throw. It's a basic, as basic of a throw as you can possibly do. And, that's part of the frustrating thing about watching that team. But the point is, it's funny how it wasn't about Chad Henne, even though it was a great play by Chad Henne. If you want to think about it, he got the snap, he rolled out, he made the perfect throw exactly where it needed to be, and it got completed. And again, if Mahomes was under center, it would be all about the Mahomes magic. Mahomes magic this, Mahomes magic that. So I thought that was a little funny that it was incredible how consistent everyone was. Like, oh my God, Andy Reid. It's like we're just now finding out how great Andy Reid is. Although, again, he's been to 8 AFC championship game weekends. So it's like we've known Andy Reid's been a great coach for a long time. But I don't know. It's, to me, it's funny. And it's part of my, the weight I carry when it comes to being a, I don't want to say hater. I want to say a realist, a Mahomes realist. That's what I am, Mike, a realist.
Well, the jury's still out on that one. But when it comes to Patrick Mahomes, I think you're absolutely right. You are realist in that case. Sorry, folks. You left yourself wide open. What was I going to do? It was right there. I had to take it. No, all kidding aside, I think you make an interesting point. And look, you know, bottom line with this team is, you know, coaching, players around you, defense, all of these things have to come together in order for a team to be solidified, in order for a team to be considered a championship contender, in order for a team to be considered great even. Mm-hmm. And Bill Cowher actually said something very similar in postgame yesterday that I admired an awful lot. And he says, for all and we're guilty of it as anybody, he says, for all of the praise that's heaped on Patrick Mahomes and all the credit that's given to him for the win, you got to look at Kansas City right now and say they won this game because they're a complete team, because mm-hmm. they got defensive stops when they needed to. They were very, disciplined in terms of coaching. You look at the end of the game, by Enemy and Reed taking a shot there. I mean, no one thought that they were going to, to drop back and pass when you're fourth and inches. It takes a little bit of guts to make a play like that, but you have the personnel to do it. It really, all of those things work hand in hand. And you saw that yesterday. Now, what that's going to mean for this weekend and the game coming up against the Buffalo Bills, I've seen various reports on, whether or not Patrick Mahomes will be able to pass through concussion protocol. It's definitely possible. I've seen players that have entered concussion protocol on a Sunday, and they've suited up for a Thursday night football game. So for anybody that thinks it's not possible that Mahomes will be able to suit up in this one, I will tell you it is possible.
I think the NFL has learned some things from the COVID situation. they know how to get these folks around these tests.
Exactly. I really hope, and I know we throw stuff against the wall all the time when it comes to Mahomes and, some of the stuff that we say. Look, beyond belief, the most important thing right now is that kid's safety. Want to see, especially with a head injury, you never want to see anybody suffer anything like that. My best wishes for his speedy recovery, and I hope he's able to go, because it's going to be an interesting game. You can only imagine what that game is going to be like with Patrick Mahomes at relatively full strength going up against a very fast Buffalo Bills defense. And I want to get to the Bills in just a moment, because they took a page out of my Friday blueprint and really were able to contain Lamar Jackson in a way that I kind of prognosticated earlier this week. I don't want to toot my own horn too much, but by doing what they did right on the very beautiful pages of Full Press Coverage, I detailed that what they needed to do was they needed to use the middle of the field. They needed to get the linebackers up in coverage and allow the secondary to be able to play lockdown in the backfield. That's going to allow the front seven to be able to stack the box and try to shut the run. Matt Milano and Tremaine Edmonds were excellent in this game. They really, I think, took an opportunity to control a very high-powered, very high-flying, high-octane offense in the Baltimore Ravens. And it was really something that as I watched it unfold, you would know that they have the personnel to do it. And this is, I thought Tre'Davious White was phenomenal all over the field. These guys play like wide receivers in a lot of ways. They play like wide receivers going up to get the football. They don't necessarily play lockdown preventative football, the ball hawking. They go after it. And against Patrick Mahomes, and to be aggressive in that fashion is something that I think may work to their advantage. So before anybody starts punching the ticket for Kansas City to punch their ticket to Tampa Bay and get to the Super Bowl to face either Tampa or Green Bay, do not sleep on the Buffalo Bills, folks. The more I look at this team, the more I delve into this team, they're a lot more dangerous than people are giving them credit for.
I'm having a bit of a crisis, because obviously there's no doubt that I'm obviously going to pick Brady and the Bucs that move to the Super Bowl. So, assuming they do win this game, as a very petty Patriots fan, I don't know what I want to see more. Do I want to see the trifecta, the Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, and Patrick Mahomes? That would be fantastic. But there would be something so deeply satisfying about the Buffalo Bills celebrating Tom Brady leaving the division, winning the division, finally getting back to the Super Bowl, only to have to face Tom Brady and lose. To me, that might outweigh the Bucks beating the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. And as much as I, again, that would probably be the perfect scenario for me, would be to, you know, the perfect, most satisfying scenario. Just the idea of them doing that to the Bills would just, I don't know. Am I crazy? Is that just pettiness, or is that I feel like that would be just, it would be fantastic. It would be so incredibly satisfying because as great as the Bills are, I feel like they'd almost get shell-shocked in this situation and be like, no, this can't happen. No, we're not supposed to see this guy anymore. And then he comes in and obviously beats him for a seventh Super Bowl. Almost double the amount of Super Bowls the Bills went to in a row and lost, so which is crazy to think about. So, but anyways, what are you thinking, Mike? Where are you on this? Are you as petty as
honestly,
I am?
Honestly, yes, I am absolutely okay, as good. Petty as you are. I am all for in Raymond James Stadium in Tampa Bay. I am all for the Buffalo Bills standing on the field, taking it all in, enjoying the moment of being in the Super Bowl and coming out and looking around the field. Oh, and then man. What do you hear? You hear the glass break, and you hear the Stone Cold Steve Austin music, and you hear Brady coming out. You hear a good old JR going, my God, that's Brady's music. And Brady comes out and just is like, you know, giving him the stare down and, you know, just like gives him the middle finger at midfield, you know, stuns Josh Allen. I'm all for it. You know,
good.
You know, taking the Bills Mafia, you know, grabbing Sean McDermott, putting him through a table. I'm all for it. And then, you know, like so instead of beer, it's going to have to be electrolyte water on the field. You get Alex Guerrero tossing midfield, you know, and he's going to be in his home stadium too. You know, you got to love it. But I am all for that. Imagine, you know, I'd rather watch that than the actual game itself. I think that'd be great.
Well, I'm paying attention to Twitter and I'm seeing people say, like, you know, as a Patriots fan, you just can't go for the Bills. How can you possibly? Because this is why. Because, again, just that whole scenario playing out would just be absolutely incredible. Because it would be like a self-satisfying toy to the face. Let's just put it that way. You know, we know Buffalo. We know what they're all about there. You know, the stuff they bring to the stadiums. But, it would be so good. I'm not putting on any act. This is my pettiness just coming right to the forefront here. That's what I want. And look, if the Bills get to the Super Bowl, we're not talking about a pushover. We're talking about a team that deserves to get there because, you know, assuming Patrick Mahomes is healthy, and I am going to assume here, I'm assuming he's going to play this weekend. I don't see why he wouldn't. Obviously, you know, he has to pass third-party tests to be cleared to play. This isn't a team decision. Again, I mean, you know, who knows what happens behind the scenes, but this is out of the team's hand. So is there a chance he doesn't play? Absolutely. But I'm going to go ahead and assume that he's going to be out there next Sunday for the AFC Championship game. The Bills still have a shot with or without Patrick Mahomes. And it's not like I give them, you know, a faint shot with Patrick Mahomes. No, look, I think, and I've said this so many times, I think Patrick Mahomes is a really good young quarterback. I don't think he is what a lot of people call him, and that's the best quarterback in the league. I don't think he's above and beyond all these other players that he's just a big difference. No, that's not the case at all, and I think there's plenty of evidence to suggest that, not only from his play, but from the play of other quarterbacks, mainly the two guys in the NFC who refuse to go away. but regardless, Mahomes in there or not, the Bills have a chance to win this game, and a very good chance. This is a good, really good defensive team who knows how to play offensively. Now, did Josh Allen have his best games this past weekend? No, but we've seen what he's capable of doing, and I would not put it past the Bills to be able to get past the Chiefs with or without a healthy Mahomes.
Absolutely. No question about it. I mean, I think that the Bills right now, again, because of the way they play defense and the quickness in which they're able to get after the pass and find the ball, this high-powered, high-octane offense of the Kansas City Chiefs is predicated on speed, especially a guy like Tyreek Hill. Mm-hmm. But when you have a ball-hawking, fast secondary, guys like Tre'Davious White, safeties like Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde that can get back there and can be physical and really prevent anything deep and keep the ball in front of you at all times, that's what the Bills are predicated on. That's what Leslie Frazier consistently preaches to this team. You need to keep the ball in front of you. Keep all of the action in front of you. If that's what they're doing, then by all means, I think the Bills have a great shot. And when you look at the way the Bills offense stacks up against Kansas City's defense, they have the ability to test this team deep, not only with Stephon Diggs, but also John Brown can get deep at times. Cole Beasley can be effective in the slot. We've seen slot receivers be effective against the Kansas City defense. We've seen Julian Edelman do it several times. I'm not comparing Beasley to Edelman. I'm not saying that they're like for like, but Beasley's playing at a high level right now, one of the hottest and one of the best slot receivers in the game right now. So this is going to be a much more interesting game than people are giving it credit for. And I, for one, cannot wait to watch this. Bills Chiefs Sunday, 6:40 p.m. CBS. Going to be a great game. Going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. And again, you know, you get two players that are very similar in Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and how they play the game. They're both able to move around and they both, like, both have very strong arms, obviously. As we heard from Tony Romo, I'm pretty sure that throw into the stands, which was complete in his mind, has not come down yet. You know, he threw it over the mountains, Mike. Threw it over the mountains and beyond the stands, all that stuff. You know what? Actually, I've seen that in a commercial before. John Elway.
Yeah, it's still going.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it's still going, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
Hasn't landed yet.
Yeah, exactly. What a throw. And the most incredible non-completed throw in the history of the game. But
we've never seen anything like it before.
Never seen anything like it, Mike. Never in the history of ever. We've never, ever seen anything like that. It feels like I don't know if we're going to get one of those offensive explosion type games, or I feel like we're going to get another kind of a slugfest between these two teams. Because I know, you know, obviously, their success is mainly derived from their offense. But both teams obviously have great defenses. So I feel like we're going to get a defensive game. Again, I could change my mind by the time, and maybe this is with, you know, even if Mahomes is in there, maybe he is a little less than 100%. Who knows? But I feel like this is going to be a very conservative play calling game from both sides, because again, I think they both respect each other's defenses and know that, hey, they can make a lot of big plays. So I don't know. I say that now, but it's going to end up being like 45-40.
Yeah, I mean, I think this has the chance to get up into the 40s without any question, because these two teams, once they start scoring and once they start, you know, getting hot, I mean, it's going to be difficult to keep them down. But again, I think you are onto something when you say that it could end up being a defensive game. I think that, you know, both defenses have the ability to start playing lockdown ball. And if there are defenses that were built to stop these types of offenses, it might be Kansas City and Baltimore. It might be Baltimore. It might be Kansas City and Buffalo. It might be, when it comes to those two sides. So this is going to be an interesting game. Like I keep saying, a lot more interesting than people are giving it credit for. Both offenses have the chance to score on these defenses and they're well suited, but in the blink of an eye, that can change. And these two defenses can help to control the offensive firepower that both teams have. So an evenly matched AFC championship game coming up. And this is going to be a fun one to watch.
Are you ready for NFL fan fiction all weekend, or all week rather?
Well, NFL fan fiction pretty much takes place all day, every day during the NFL season into the playoffs. Are we ready? Yeah, are we ready for it more than usual? Yeah, I don't know. I guess.
I'm talking specifically about Aaron Rodgers, because, you know, again, and I'm going to say this ahead of time. Nothing that happens on Sunday between these two teams will do anything to change the historical rank of those two quarterbacks. I'm just going to be very clear. There is nothing, and I mean nothing, that Tom Brady can do that will hurt his legacy. Because as we know, Mike, as we heard all week, this is his hardest playoff game this past weekend, and his legacy defining game, even though he has 6 Super Bowls and 9 appearances and 14 championship game appearances. There is nothing that will happen this weekend that will elevate Aaron Rodgers over Tom Brady overall. So get that out of your mind now, because unfortunately that's going to be the driving force, I think, for a lot of these conversations this week. It's going to be about how much will Aaron Rodgers elevate himself to good. No, No. I don't know how many times. I'm going to learn six different languages, or I'm going to learn how to say no in like six different languages, and I'm going to say it over and over and over again. I don't care if the Packers win by 21 points and go to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl. That would be fantastic for Aaron Rodgers' career. It would do things individually for him that will elevate his own career, but it will be nothing compared to what Brady has done. And again, I feel like we're going down that path where that's going to be the storyline going into this game. And then at the end of the day, when Brady goes to his 10th Super Bowl, it's not, you know, it's not going to be a big deal. It's like, well, of course, look at the team around. No, look at him. Look at him. Stop passing all this off as just coincidence. It's not coincidence. It's Brady.
Yeah. That's exactly it. I mean, you know, yesterday so many tweets going around the Twitterverse were all about, oh, well, you know, obviously, you know, maybe the system talk. I mean, it's amazing to me how a couple of Buccaneers playoff wins have endeared Tom Brady to the masses more than two decades of success here in New England. It amazes me. It's like everybody forgot what he did up here for nearly 20 years. But you know, albeit, I guess it's just the uniform he wore, or maybe the head coach that he had. I don't know. There was a lot that prevented people from giving him credit. And there are still some out there. There are still some out there that won't give him credit no matter what he does. He could literally walk on water and they'll go, oh, that's system water.
Yeah,
you know?
There's
a piece of glass underneath it.
Snake oil, Mike.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't sink in snake oil.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there are still some that'll never give the guy credit where credit is due. But at the same time, when you look at what he has been able to do, and you look at what he did for a team that was a non-playoff team last year, taking a crew that, for everybody that says that he packed the team, I mean, who did he bring in? He brought in Rob Gronkowski.
Nice use of the word crew, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Buccaneer crew, one of Tortuga.
Yeah, exactly. Right, so anyway, but
down,
but in any case, you know, what did he really bring in? What did he really pack this team with? He brought in Rob Gronkowski, and I, with every bit of reverence to Rob, you know, I love covering the guy up here, always will. I still don't understand some of the bitterness the Patriots fans have for him right now. He didn't shoot his way out of town, folks. He made a decision, and he made a professional one. It wasn't what we wanted, but it was well within his, you know, character and well within his, you know, right to do so. But I digress on that. Rob Gronkowski is not the same player. He's a good tight end. He's still very good at what he does. We saw yesterday he can still make plays, but he's not what he was in his heyday. Antonio Brown is not what everyone expected him to be. He's been good, but he hasn't been great. So when you look at the team that Tom Brady went to, he's going to a team that last year did not make the playoffs with all of these quote unquote weapons that supposedly are what is buoying Brady to this level. It's not the case, folks. It's the influence of Tom Brady. And for all that, you know, we give to Bruce Arians, I was very surprised to hear him say last night in a post-game press conference, you know, maybe the Patriots didn't allow Brady to coach all that much, but I do. And he listens to him, and he allows him to be able to call plays, be able to have input where you you see him on the offensive side of the ball. And I'll tell you, it showed in the second half of the game. I saw a lot of quote-unquote Patriot-like plays being pulled out of the playbook last night. That one route, the side route that he ran to Rob Gronkowski, I've seen that thousands of times up here in New England, and it really solidifies that type of influence that Brady can have. And you know he had Josh's ear when he was up here as well. So for all the credit that people don't want to give him, Brady is the system, folks. It's not a system quarterback. It's not a system, you know, success. You want to know what the system is? Tom Brady is the system. Maybe some people are waking up to it now.
You know, you tooted your horn a little bit earlier, and I will, before I toot my own horn, and I'll hold off for just a second. That was the frustrating thing about how the game started for the Bucs, was it felt like they reverted back to, and I said it on Twitter, it's like, you do wonders when you throw on first down. And I don't mean throwing every single time on first down, because again, that would become just as predictable as what they were doing and what they've done for the majority of the time they've struggled on offense. And it's the very predictable run on the left or the right on first down every single time. And every time they were doing it, they were stalling early and being forced into long second and third down conversions. All of a sudden, you start throwing a couple times on first down, put the defense on the heels, and then you can do whatever the hell you want. And that's what happened in the second half. But back to tooting my own horn. Over the past, 18 months or so, probably goes further than that, but, you know, we'll keep it into the more recent history. Who has been more right about Tom Brady? And it's kind of a rhetorical question, because I know the answer. I know the answer, and you should know the answer. It's me. It's me, Mike. I'm serious, though. I mean, forget about the fact that I absolutely nailed his statistical output, and I'm giving myself credit for saying 38, and he got 40 touchdowns. I'm not going to, you know, split hairs there. He did what I expected him to do. And the same people that spent all of last season, you know, hammering home, oh, he's just not that good anymore. His age has finally caught up to him. Look at him. He's only thrown 24 touchdowns. Well, it's like that never happened, because all those same people are now pivoting to other narratives that just keep getting knocked off. I mean, this season has been all about knocking off these narratives. Like, everyone, you know, remember how, you know, the last grasp straw for Peyton Manning people were like, oh, Peyton went to a different team and he went this way. Well, guess what? In Peyton Manning's first season, 6 years younger than Brady is right now, it didn't even come close. Well, it came close. I'm not going to say it didn't come close. It wasn't as good as Brady's season this year. And Brady has his team in the NFC Championship game and potentially a Super Bowl in his first season. And again, that team, that Denver team, had just won a playoff game with Tim Tebow under center versus the Buccaneers, who hadn't won a playoff game since they won the Super Bowl in 2002, which, again, to put it in perspective, at that time, Tom Brady only had one Super Bowl. So I will say this. I think I've been very right about Tom and pretty consistent. And you would think that the people that have been telling me I'm wrong all the time would finally come around, but nope. Apparently, I'm just the fanboy Patriots fan who is a Brady apologist. But hey, let's just keep playing this out, because each and every week I feel like I'm getting justified. Because I'll say it like I said last week: give me a reason why Tom Brady still isn't the best quarterback in the league. Look, Aaron Rodgers, yeah, great season. He deserves the MVP. He's going to get it. I still would, if you're looking at this matchup, the advantage goes to Tom Brady, and I don't think there's any question. So. I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so either. As a matter of fact, PFT commenter on for Barstool, it amazed me the amount of people that actually fell for this too. Where he commented and he said, "Gee, I wonder. You know, really makes you wonder whether or not Tom Brady's going to be able to hold up in the cold weather of Green Bay this weekend." I mean, yeah. You know, it amazes me actually, the amount of people that fell for it.
Real quick, before I saw that, it was actually someone sent it to me on Twitter. Because I actually asked the question. I was like, how long will it take before someone questions whether or not he can win in the cold? And it was kind of a joke, but it was kind of serious. Like, you know, someone's going to make that stupid point, and you're going to sit there and be like, what? So that's funny that he did say that, though. I think right around the time I tweeted that out originally. So that's great. I'm glad.
Exactly. And you know what? It really is. I mean, for everybody that says, oh, well, Brady's going to have problems and he's going to have difficulty. You know, I really, what I worry about and what I, you know, look for from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is, will that same type of defensive effort show up against the Green Bay offense? Because Green Bay's offense is formidable and they can put up points. Aaron Rodgers will play markedly better than Drew Brees played yesterday. So to me, that's really the key of the game. If Tampa Bay is going to be able to confuse Aaron and make the difficulties or add the difficulties that they added the last time these two teams faced off, then, yeah, I think you're looking at a pretty good and pretty solid chance for Tampa Bay to really make something happen. If not, then you're probably looking at a much closer game, and this could go down to the wire, because Green Bay is capable of making plays. But I have no doubt about whether Tom Brady can go in and put up points on the Green Bay defense. I've seen him do it. I know he can do it, especially this late in the season. Tom's got that look in his eye. We've seen it before. We're going to continue to see it again. He's on a mission to prove a lot of people wrong, and he's already doing a great job of it in certain circles.
I mean, this guy's gone up You know, the Saints and the football team both have really good defenses, highly ranked, you know, in most major statistics. So, you know, I'm not just points per game, you know, that's kind of the go-to for the anti-Brady crowd. Coincidentally or not, I mean, I don't know how you take this, but the Patriots have relatively same defensive ranks as, you know, the ones that people think are just guaranteed Super Bowl wins. But that's a different conversation for a different day. But the two defenses the Bucks went through were quite impressive. And for all the slack that Tom gets, and, like, you know, this was a narrative that kind of hopefully goes away now because we heard it going in, 1-5 against playoff teams. That was 2 weeks ago. 1-5. Like, this is kind of along the lines of the can he play in the cold. It's like you're questioning whether or not he can perform against great defenses and great teams. I mean, do we just literally just start with a clean slate and forget everything he's done over the last 20 years? But we are going to have to wrap this up, though, because it's already 9:58 and we're off the air here soon. So tomorrow, I love tomorrow. I love Tuesdays, Mike. I know you do, too, because you don't get to talk too much. So you get to sit back and relax. John Sapicetti's going to join us. And
Will be fun.
We might have
to. How many times tomorrow am I going to have to invoke the Johnny Lawrence? Quiet.
Yeah, quiet.
I can only imagine how much this is going to.
No, John and I obviously have a lot of fun with it. I think he's wrong. I think I'm right when it comes to Rodgers versus Brady, especially right now. I still think Brady's a better quarterback than Aaron Rodgers, and, you know, again, try to disprove. You know, what has Brady done? That was my point. What has Brady done to lose that? But we'll get into that, I'm sure, tomorrow. And maybe we'll have to ask him to return later in the week because it might just call for it this occasion. But no, we'll get into it more tomorrow and obviously start breaking down these games because we have a couple great games on tap. Give us a follow on Twitter at Full Press Radio. At IGLEN31 is my handle. And, of course, at MDABATEF. PC is Mike's. Interact with us. Let us know what you think. Questions. Look forward to the little speech we're going to write for Dylan and Ross for later this week on the program. And then, of course, stay tuned for all of our great breakdown and of our incredibly accurate predictions that we're going to have later in the week. So have a great day, folks, and we will talk to you tomorrow.